Just to get us into the mood, folks, here's a wee bumper.
DS 106 Good Spell, turn your radio on.
Yeah, oh, I've just turned our radio on for the second time tonight. Thanks, Kathy, for the heads up. We were broadcasting on the wrong radio station. With a choice of two, you would think I could make it more interesting. But more often I could get it right. But this is the DS 106 Good Spell.
Oh, I'm going to have to laugh.
And maybe I'm not going to read the whole intro again, but patch in later, I think. Okay. Mariana and I have been rehearsing carefully for the last 10 minutes on another radio channel, which I certainly hope that not too many people were listening to, because they would have been confused. We are talking about the bullet point this week from Mariana's series of bullet points on our blog post, and this bullet point is number 62, and it goes kinetic type typography, animated GIFs, audio, video, web stories, everything seeded early in the journey and made manageable as it complicates itself. Now, on the basis that nobody heard what we were saying earlier, Mariana, we can just kind of go over that again, I guess. But on you go.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the things you were asking about that bullet, and when we were rehearsing, of course, not futzing at all,
yeah.
was about the what seeded early meant. And the thing that we've started to talk about is how in DS-106, a lot of things that we do later on a run of DS-106 get seeded early on, almost before the course actually starts. And of course, the nature of it being open, you always have access to everything. So in fact, you could start as early as you want, not just on the day that it formally starts if you're doing a formal run. So that was about the seeded early part. And then the other bit that we were talking about was around how a lot of what we do is reward people for just having a go at anything.
Mm.
And we help them the best way we can. And we encourage everybody to use the web and use different resources to learn, to try anything. So by the time you get to the formal module, the week where you're doing audio or the week where you're doing animated GIFs, you've already tried small little things that kind of make you feel, well, I could tackle this.
Mm.
It starts to get more complicated after that, of course.
And I think there's a couple of things that the daily creates quite often take you into some of the things, because they are supposedly easy and quick things to do, although I'm sure I've lost a day or two sometimes to them. But the other thing I think is, and earlier on when we were talking, I was mentioning as a sort of maybe a slightly negative, that if you come in just before the course starts, you begin to see all these people that have been there before and they're doing stuff that maybe looks difficult or all the rest of it, and that might be slightly off-putting. But I think the other thing that does is it sets a tone for the course.
Mm-hmm.
And the tone is this idea of, you were mentioning, just keep trying, but also a sort of slight irreverence to things and a playfulness, mm-hmm. that is really important.
A memorable thing about for me of that was the Headless 13 avatar, the animated GIF, when we were the task, I think, was to create an animated GIF with, the sort of headless theme. And you made this wonderful thing with, with the head on fire and all sorts of, wonderful things were popping. And I was, I had absolutely no idea how I would make an animated GIF with the headless. Headless shrink, I had no idea. In the end, I settled, I remember, for a still photograph, because I thought, okay, I could manage that. And the animated GIF came afterwards once I'd learned more how to do things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but I think that's hopefully as people come on that quite quickly any worries about exposing themselves go away, because you don't really get knocked for it, and I think that's important as well. And you've got people, as I say, in there already who have got the spirit of a course. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly, I think, a big part of it is helping other people. The movie was a wee example, I think, of this week in Google Plus group.
On the Google Plus, we've got a new person, and I think she's doing it just as an open participant, and her name is Erin, and she out of nowhere she posted. When was it? You probably remember at the beginning, sort of last kind of, and she just posted her first week. She's done her first week, and here was, you know, her summary for the first week. I thought that was just lovely. And the reason why it's an example was because I saw a lot of me in her as she was trying her first animated GIF, and then Kathy was trying to help, and other people were trying to help. But what was lovely, I thought, was that she posted at some point, "I'm not addicted," and then she's proceeded to post about three or four or six different tries of something, because she was trying to do something that she could not do. And then the people on the Google Plus community who know about GIMP and work with GIMP and animated GIFs jumped in to help, because she isn't a Photoshop person. So yes, and eventually I think she just posted a GIF that is closer to what she wanted. But interestingly, I thought, she said, okay, I almost got it, but I can see that it is not quite right because the frames are not aligned. So from not having any idea of how to do this thing, she's already assessing what needs to happen with her latest GIF in order to make it better.
Hmm.
And that's learning, isn't it?
Yeah. In this case, you can see very clearly that learning I'm not saying in the full glare of the spotlight or anything, but learning publicly with some pals around or potential pals is a really useful thing for her to do, because people do help.
I think interestingly often it's this thing about how we reward people trying, because if she posted something and nobody had said anything, or if she'd posted a question and people hadn't responded, often we may not, like for example, Christine, I think, is one of the people who responded. She hasn't been doing a great deal because she's so busy in her own life doing other things on the Google Plus community, but you know, she came through to help because it was a GIMP thing, and she does all her GIFs on GIMP. So that's the thing that's nice, I think, you know. And then and it's not an isolated occurrence. In fact, I think, you know, I was helped in the same way, you know, and many other people are, particularly when you go, oh my God, I just can't do this thing, I don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, you point people to tutorials. I've been doing that with somebody on direct messaging, not on the community thing, just giving them tutorials and stuff, because you try to help when people want to learn, and I think we all do that quite a lot, and that makes it, I think, hopefully it takes away from the potential negativity of feeling, oh my God, I can't do it, and these people are doing all this stuff. But I don't know.
Yeah, and well, just talking of I can't do it, let's go to kinetic typography. Because that was the first thing that you mentioned in bullet number 62, is kinetic typography. And I had a quick look at the assessment bank, or I always call it assessment bank for some reason. I must be fixated in assessment for some the assignment bank in DS106, and there's a kinetic typography assignment, and it is really one of the fewest, or the, you know, there's five, I think, people have tried this assignment, and I think, yeah, there is there five people have assigned it, and the difficulty public rating by three people is 4.5 out of 5 stars. it looks like something that should be quite simple.
Yes.
Because it's just text, and you know, you think, well, it's text, I don't have to be, you know, very arty or whatever. So just before we go on, I'll just mention kinetic typography is the technical name, it says, Wikipedia says, for moving text, an animation technique mixing motion and text to express ideas using video animation. The text
is the most awesome thing that ever, ever, ever happened. And if I had all the time in the world, I'll do nothing but learn how to make it.
Yeah, it can be really nice. But I think I very seldom let anything out when I've tried to do it, because it just fails. But some people are good at it. And one of the posts that you mentioned and linked to in our show notes was this one by... who is it? Kirk Lunsford, who's a designer. And I don't know if you want to just...
Yes, I mean, I remember him. I think it was either the University of Mary Washington, but no, I think you remember when there was this group of people who were doing DS106 at a different university, and we talked about them as the old ones, because they were older people, they were more kind of experienced people, and Kirk was one of those. It was a smaller group, I think it was the University of San Diego or something, and he did, I think it was just the one, and it was a very short video with kinetic typography, but the thing that was really helpful, to me at least, was that because he's a designer, he talked through his whole process, and one of the things that I discovered at that point is that people, when they know what they're doing with animation, they do very clear sketches up front about the whole kind of where the thing needs to end, and then they work backwards from there to create the animation and break it down in chunks. And if you see the video, I think it's probably under a minute long, it's really very short. And yet the post is really long, and he worked like a dog to get that to work.
It was
really difficult, and when you see it, you think,
"Huh?" Yeah. Oh, I thought it was a bit. It's lovely.
It's beautiful, but you know, you just don't get the sense. I think you're right with kinetic typography, of the amount of work that actually goes into the making of it. It's quite fascinating to me that.
Yeah. Well, I think. Kirk, certainly, if you look at his Twitter account, which is at Kirk Lunsford, he's got a pinned tweet at the top, which is a link to the post on his blog about the kinetic typography. It's hard to say with your teeth in. And
so you know, the post you're talking too.
About. Oh, yeah, I think, you know, and I say he looks like... He's got sketches. He obviously can draw and think and lay things out. So very, yeah, you need to bring quite a lot of skills to the table, I think, to manage kinetic typography.
It isn't just about the animation. It isn't just about the letters. It's how you pull all of that together. Mm-hmm. And then the thing that interests me the most, which may be less obvious, is how you use the design to indicate meaning. Is that thing about, you know, how you make the letters jump, or you make the, you know, so that the meaning of the word is expressed in the text. I just think that that's really fascinating. I really enjoy good examples of it.
Yeah.
And I think Kirk's is a great example, because it's really it's a professional thing. If you look at it, you know, it's not me trying to trying to create a few letters that dance together.
Well, I think that we dip our toes into things that are maybe too hard for us sometimes or are going to take a long time, and I'm sure that maybe we'll come back to some kinetic topography, Mariana, at some point and have another shot at it, and we might get a wee bit better, and then another time we might get good enough.
What I tell you what I did at the beginning, because I was determined, I cheated. Well, I mean, not cheated, everybody knew, but, you know, there is such a thing as a kinetic generators.
Mm-hmm.
And I found some, and I still managed to, because I just wanted some dancing letters. I just couldn't, and I just had to have some dancing letters. I'm sorry, John, but I just had to have them, even if it wasn't of my making.
Yeah.
And the generators are wonderful things that one can use. You have no control over speed, you have no control over the design, but at the very least, if you want a lovely quote and you want it to be doing a bit of movement, the generators are okay. They're not. Some of them are not too bad. So it's good to say that to people, I suppose, too, because there are ways around this thing. Same with GIFs, isn't there? You've got generators and...
I think we've talked about this before. There's a kind of tension between how close to the bone you go with making something digital. You know, you can grab a YouTube URL, paste it in somewhere on the internet and choose the bit you want and it'll make an animated GIF for you, or you can do something incredibly complicated in Photoshop with lots of layers, or I guess you could paint the whole thing in pixels with paint and make different frames. So you can take all these things at different levels, and I think one of the interesting things about
Hello, Rocky Lou. We've missed you, Rocky Lou. You've not been around for a bit. We are glad to see you.
Yeah.
And I did admit to cheating. You're right.
Yeah.
Go on. Sorry.
That's okay. But, you know, that almost is an interesting way to sort of scaffold your learning, because you can start and you can produce something. So you can deal with something from the idea point of view. So you might not have the skills or the chops to use Final Cut Pro for making a movie, but you can use iMovie, for instance, and it's for something like myself, that's probably as far as you're ever going to go, but other people will use that as a stepping stone and move on to more complicated things when they get to the point they need to. And there's as you say, there's these generator sites all over the internet, which the knowledge you need is basically where they are and to have an idea and see what comes out of the end there.
What is interesting about that is sometimes the lengths that we will go to, even with cheating, as I call it, the lengths we will go to produce something. Because one of the things, certainly for myself, one of the things that I found as I've got better at digital artifacts is that some of these generators are not satisfactory because they don't offer you what you want in quite the same way. So I learned, I learned kind of shortcuts. So I would, do a screencast of the thing generated, and then I would drop it into iMovie, and then I could... I could at least do something with it. I could slow it down, speed it up, and so on. So the things that we will do to still create something that will meet our aesthetic criteria, whatever that might be, it's interesting. Anyway, initially you're just happy that you've produced something in a generator, but as you get to know, it's a bit like the Ira Glass quote, right? Your taste is impeccable. You know that it's not quite right, and eventually you learn to make it closer to your taste, which is lovely, I think. And that is the nature of you just keep going. You keep going, keep going. It gets more complicated, but you learn a little bit more.
We hope so, yeah. I think this is what you talk about in that bullet, is that it gets more complicated. You see more things in telling a story or doing something like that. as it's there, then Rocky Blue says cheetah or DS-106 training wheels. I think that's a that's a really good analogy, because you start off with something, and I guess that people could say, well, I don't think training wheels are really a good idea. You've just got to get out there and get your knees scarred up the hard way, or training wheels, they didn't have that when I was a boy. We just got pushed down the lane by my mum on a bike and fell over. But different folk will, you know, do different things.
That's how I felt the first time that I opened Adobe Premiere Pro to try and edit video. It's exactly how I felt. I felt like I'd been sent down the lane with an old person's bicycle. Yeah. And I went, oh my God, I think we'll leave this for another time.
Yeah.
And I never opened it again, no. I must admit. But I think Rochelle uses it. I know there are a few people in the S106 open community, and I know some other people are using After Effects. I haven't started with After Effects.
Well, that's just as a by-the-by and a tip, I think one of the really useful applications that for kinetic typography and other video trick stuff is ScreenFlow, which is a paid-for application, but it's very clever at putting text together and changing things, and you know.
Do you know that was? I started using ScreenFlow on your recommendation, and my intent was to use it for the kinetic typography, because you said exactly that it was a good way to get in there. And actually, I find myself using it more and more for video because it's just a lovely thing. It does wonderful things. But I'd forgotten about you until you just said it again. I'd forgotten that you said actually it's really good for text as well, and I've never tried that properly. I just do it as a prep, and then I stick things either in Photoshop or on iMovie. But I should go back to that and look at ScreenFlow for that, for the kinetic typography. And I guess it can probably almost produce animated GIFs too, if you know, because I've used it as a preparation, and then stuck them in Photoshop to get
it. So you'd export it to video.
But listen to that, you know, the kind of thing that we are talking about, and, you know, Kathy's talking about, you know, choosing the right tool for the right time, and I think absolutely sometimes you just don't have the time, and you want to know that there is an easy way to, you know, to get a result. But, you know, if I then think back to the beginning of my DS-106 journey, when, you know, that time when, you know, make a headless GIF, and I went, what the hell, I have no idea. I had no idea how to choose anything. I didn't even know these things existed, let alone be able to have a meaningful conversation about what the right tool might be for me at this point. So that's lovely. It's a wonderful thing to kind of reflect back and see how much you learn from this idea of, you know, well, just try it. Try something and see what you... And then, you know, ask for help if you need it.
Yeah.
That's like you know, Alan Levine's golden rule. Try for half an hour, and if you've tried for half an hour and you can't make it happen, ask.
That seems like a really fair enough, or, you know, as I've tried for half an hour and then Google it or chuck it or whatever, but, you know, you can get an awful lot out of the trying, and then at that point you're probably ready for a wee hand up. You know, if you ask for help too soon as well, or get help, I think that maybe the sort of thing when we're talking about Erin, she started posting her work, so that means you've done something, you've started, so we can now talk to you about it with, and you'll recognise the things you're learning about. And I guess that speaks to, you know, the area of proximal whatever. You know, you can only learn things.
Thinking about flow.
No. I think the Scots, I can't pronounce anybody's name, you know, old Russian guy. Vyskotsky. And my colleague at work is a very keen follower. The zone of proximity. Oh, if I could, this is not my medium, really. I'd be better doing mime. The zone of proximal development. But the idea is that there's certain things you can't learn because you don't have the knowledge to get there. And there's a sort of, if you're trying to do something that's way too hard for you, you're probably not going to get there. You need to learn something that's just a wee bit too hard for you.
I know this idea from the perspective of having your skills be a close enough match to the challenge that you're setting yourself. And that if it isn't close enough, if it's too far, it'll cause stress and you'll go away from it. If it's too easy, it'll be boring and you won't do it. So it's finding that space where it's flow psychology from the way I know it is from Csikszentmihalyi, who is also a psychologist, and he talks about finding flow when you do things, make things, and in our case would be, you know, that it's not so far, and I suspect kinetic typography is that step too far.
Yeah.
For me certainly, where I've just gone, oh God, I just can't do this. Like opening up Premiere Pro, it's too much. I can't. And it's finding that kind of channel where there is a balance between your skills and the challenge that you're setting yourself.
Yeah,
that's how I am. That's how I know that. I don't know about this other thing that you're talking about, but it's a similar idea, isn't it?
It would probably help if I could pronounce anything in a reasonable way.
Don't try, leave it alone.
I think it's a really important idea that, you know, you get that and then you move on and you move on, and you've got to be going at a certain speed or things become too hard and they don't stick. And it's not even the skill, I think, in doing something or using the tools. It's very often, I think that's what we're talking about when we're talking about Kirk's work, is that he understood the design process. He was a very visual thinker, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So he could move into that process. And I certainly think that it's quite hard to pull together, you know, the idea of words and what they look like and the meaning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's something that looks as if it should be within your grasp, or within a sort of arm's length reach, and it's
I played with it because it was my start to try and start to do that. I played with it with still posters when we were doing the Prisoner 106, and I had a great deal of fun. They were lovely, but it was really hard to do. And this was just the still poster, trying to design it, and, you know, to have the words kind of, you know, look like, be designed like the meaning, and use the right fonts and all of that. And there is a whole lot that you can read about it. So I started, but it's, you know, a tiny amount of knowledge, when clearly there is a huge amount of design knowledge, certainly, as well as typography and animation that you need to know in order to pull that whole thing together. Also, there's something about what's obvious to you when you know it, which may be some of what you were talking about. What's obvious to you when you know it, you are not even able to understand when people tell you this is what you should do, because you don't know where to look. And I'm reminded, as an example, seeing Rochelle on my stream, I remember when we were doing a collaborative animated GIF with Alice in Wonderland a long time ago. It was with an image of Alice in Wonderland, and lots of people had a go, and I wanted to have a go at putting Colin Gifferdog on this animated GIF, and I tried and I tried and I couldn't get it to, and I got a thing in there, but it was just wrong. I could see it was just wrong, not working. And Rochelle, she actually did a screencast showing me exactly what she'd done because she corrected it, made it look nice so that it blended properly, and then made a screencast for me, put it up on YouTube so that I could see exactly what it was I needed to do, whether it was Photoshop or GIMP. I can't even remember. It's a long time ago now. But, you know, she tried however many different ways to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
I just couldn't get it. So it's that thing, isn't it? Sometimes you're just not ready because the tool is just too different in relation to what you know. But yeah. It is nice though to have, you know, to have the flexibility. Certainly this is something that I think is typical of the digital storytelling, kind of digital, you know, working digitally, that you can do those things. You know, you could get on a Hangout, you could get on Skype, you could get a video to say to people, let me just show you.
Yeah, every time I think of this, it's quite amazing, the fact that we can learn from Rochelle, who is on the other side of the Atlantic. It's mind-blowing, really, that, you know, used to, you'd be able to learn off somebody who you could be in a classroom with. And now we can learn right across, and it can be back and forward. And after telling you 26 times or something, Rochelle can eventually throw her hands up and say, I'll make a screencast, and you'll definitely get that. It's just the affordances of the tools we've got are just amazing.
It is a It's a wonderful thing to have the possibility to do that. And but also, I think, you know, there is something about the nature of the ES-106 where, because of how we learn about, you know, we learn how to learn online, but you also learn how to teach online, because all of these things are about, you know, teaching other people. Yeah. Because you kind of go, okay, oh God, and how am I going to teach? So, you know, I learned that from Rochelle at that time, and not long ago when I was, you know, helping somebody learn how to do an animated GIF, I did the exact same thing. Oh, I'll just do a quick screencast. And I used ScreenFlow for it. Just do a quick one, edit it, quick, done, and I posted it. And it's so you learn this kind of, well, how do you show them when you're not there? And all of that is part of the process of making art. You know, you're just making stuff, but in order to get to that end point, you have to learn all the other stuff, which is that's the sneaky thing that the S106 does.
Yeah,
not many people know about.
I think it's really important and delightful, and I'm probably going to keep that wee video Rochelle posted as well for you, because I may have to use Photoshop again sometime in my life.
Nice if she's good at finding things. If she would find the animated GIF, because the animated GIF was beautiful that we did, and lots of people added bits, and Rochelle did her thing where, you know, people added bits, not everybody as skillfully as they could, like me adding the dog. and she very, you know, very gently corrected everything and said, oh, I just thought I'd blend this and I blur that and I add this, and it looks beautiful. It's a beautiful thing that ended up being from all of us practicing together how to make an animated GIF. That was for the Headless 13, I'm pretty sure.
November 13. That was the screencast was posted November 13, so I'm guessing that was that run of the course.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were talking, I think, covered that bullet as well as we ever cover one. Is there anything else you want to run?
And did we need a special mention for our four-legged listener? I hope you've noticed that we've got Anna Cow is listening.
Good evening, Anna. Yeah.
And live tweeting at the same time as listening. I mean, this is one skilled cow we've got.
It's just four hoofs. I think an unfair advantage. I only type with two fingers and she's got four hoofs. I imagine with a very large keyboard though. It's just
has to be waterproof.
I saw a nice cow gif today, actually. There was a little girl who was lying cuddling her cow and stroking it. It's a big clean, looked like an Ayrshire to me, but It was a nice picture, and not something you see people do very often, have an affectionate cow pet. But anyway, good evening, Anna. And do you think we'll just wrap it up there then, Mariana? Okay, yes. So I'll put on a wee bumper, and we'll bumper out of here if I can.
Actually, Fix Radio for life.
For life, indeed. Yep.
And especially for Annie Cow.
Yeah. But actually, I'm just looking through iTunes here, and there's one I think you sent me, which is Stephen Fry Kinetic.
Oh, that's lovely, because it's about language and about words. It's quite long, but it's not too bad. It's lovely. Do we have it as audio?
Yes.
It's lovely. It would be quite appropriate given what we've talked about.
Okay.
It's really nice. He's so smart. And the words are really lovely. But there is, if we can find it, a wonderful, the best kinetic typography video that I've ever seen about that speech that you'll hear.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll put this on. It's going to be about 6 minutes, folks. So we'll just say good night now. I'll hang the mics up, but leave you with Stephen Fry.
For me, it's a cause of some upset that more Anglophones don't enjoy language. Music is enjoyable, it seems. So are dance and other athletic forms of movement. People seem to be able to find sensual and sensuous pleasure in almost anything but words these days. Words, it seems, belong to other people. Anyone who expresses themselves with originality, delight, and verbal freshness is more likely to be mocked, distrusted, or disliked than welcomed. The free and happy use of words appears to be considered elitist or pretentious. Sadly, desperately sadly, the only people who seem to bother with language in public today bother with it in quite the wrong way. They write letters to broadcasters and newspapers in which they are rude and haughty about other people's usage, and in which they show off their own superior knowledge of how language should be. I hate that, and I particularly hate the fact that so many of these pedants assume that I'm on their side. When asked to join in a "let's persuade this supermarket chain to get rid of their 5 items or less sign," I never join in. Yes, I am aware of the technical distinction between less and fewer, and between uninterested and disinterested, and infer and imply, and all the rest of them, but none of these are of importance to me. None of these are of importance, I said there. You'll notice the old pedantic me would have insisted on none of them is of importance. Well, I'm glad to say I've outgrown that silly approach to language. Oscar Wilde, and there have been few greater and more complete lords of language in the past 1,000 years, once included with a manuscript he was delivering to his publishers a compliment slip in which he had scribbled the injunction, "I'll leave you to tidy up the woulds and shoulds, wills and shalls, thats and whiches, etc." Which gives us all encouragement to feel less guilty, don't you think? There are all kinds of pedants around, with more time to read and imitate Lynn Truss and John Humphreys than to write poems, love letters, novels and stories, it seems. They whip out their sharpies and take away and add apostrophes from public signs, shake their heads at prepositions which end sentences, and mutter at split infinitives and misspellings. But do they bubble and froth and slobber and cream with joy at language? Do they ever let the tripping of the tips of their tongues against the tops of their teeth transport them to giddy, euphoric bliss? Do they ever yoke impossible words together for the sound sex of it? Do they use language to seduce, charm, excite, please, affirm and tickle those they talk to? Do they? I doubt it. They're too farting busy sneering at a greengrocer's less than perfect use of the apostrophe. Well, sod them to Hades. They think they're guardians of language. They're no more guardians of language than the Kennel Club is the guardian of dog kind. And the worst of this sorry bunch of semi-educated losers are those who seem to glory in being irritated by nouns becoming verbs. How dense and deft a language development do you have to be, If you don't like nouns becoming verbs, then for heaven's sake avoid Shakespeare, who made a doing word out of a thing word every chance he got. He tabled the motion and chaired the meeting in which nouns were made verbs. I suppose new examples from our time might take some getting used to. He actioned it that day, for instance, might strike some as a verbing too far. But we've been sanctioning, envisioning, propositioning and stationing for a long time, so why not actioning? Because it's ugly, whinge the pedants. Well, it's only ugly because it's new and you don't like it. Ugly in the way Picasso, Stravinsky and Eliot were once thought ugly, and before them Monet, Mahler and Baudelaire. Pedants will also claim, with what I'm sure is eye-popping insincerity and shameless disingenuousness, that their fight is only for clarity. Well, this is all very well, but there's no doubt what, for example, 5 items or less means. Just as only a dolt can't tell from the context and from the age and education of the speaker whether disinterested is used in the proper sense of non-partisan or in the improper sense of uninterested. No, the claim to be defending language for the sake of clarity almost never ever holds water. Nor does the idea that following grammatical rules in language demonstrates clarity of thought and intelligence of mind. Having said this, I admit that if you want to communicate well for the sake of passing an exam or job interview, then it's obvious that wildly original and excessively heterodox language could land you in the soup. I think what offends examiners and employers when confronted with extremely informal, unpunctuated and haywire language is the implication of not caring that underlies it. You slip into a suit for an interview, and you dress your language up too. You can wear what you like linguistically or sartorially when you're at home or with friends, but most people accept the need to smarten up under some circumstances. It's only considerate. But that's an issue of fitness, of suitability. It has nothing to do with correctness. There's no right language or wrong language any more than there are right or wrong clothes. Context, convention, and circumstance are all. I can't deny that a small part of me still clings to a ghastly Radio 4 newspaper letter writer pedantry, but I fight against it in much the same way I try to fight against my gluttony, anger, selfishness and other vices. I must confess, for example, that I find it hard not to wince when someone aspirates the word, and it is a word, H-A-I-T-C-H.